and welcome to episode 248 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, a place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, artist of the Monster Spotters Club, and joining me this week, are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the third wheel to our tricycle of doom, Mr. Tony Esmond.
Hello. The tricycle of sex, not doom. Well, it's same thing.
potato, potato. welcome to the show, folks. We're all in a fantastic mood. We've been reading a lot of comics. We've been creating a lot of stuff. And we just had a fantastic interview with one Jason McNamara that you're going to hear very soon.
What a dude. We'd never spoke to him before, and he turned out to be a dude.
Yeah. I love it when that happens.
Yeah.
Get on the show and it's fun.
Yeah. All we knew was these comics are badass. So, and you're gonna hear more about those very shortly. But we're in such a good mood, and we're not even fueled by caffeine. I don't know if you've had caffeine tonight, Jens.
I've had a lot of caffeine today.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Go on.
Since the lockdown, like, it always seems like something to do, you know.
Yeah.
Coffee. I've had a lot of coffee today.
That's not the way to live your life, gents.
I built some bookshelves this week.
That's
how bad it's been.
Yeah. Well, no, you built some bookshelves for the next level of your giant fucking tomb you're building for yourself that is your comic book library.
Mo comics, mo bookshelves, baby.
Yeah.
I've got a thing. I'm gaslighting my colleagues at work. They say now I'm getting really fat and not doing an exercise. I've set up like an exercise routine and a weights bench. I'm doing weights in the morning, weights in the evening. I'm going to be eating all the proper stuff. I'm going to come back like a fucking tank. 3 months of this hardcore training at home.
Well, there's going to be a lot of people who will have done a lot of wanking, don't they? Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Got to be done.
And we hope you lovely listeners are staying safe and healthy as well. So, yes.
How are you getting through it? I'll tell you how we're getting through it. We're reading comics on Comic House, but also we're doing our draw-off competition, which
You've set up. I thought, Jesus Christ, the boy's done well.
I thought I was taking that turn, and I thought, that's too pro.
No. I thought, this is smooth. This is amazing. This is Dan Butcher at his finest. And then you went and ruined it.
I handbrake it back round. Yeah, so we've been spending our time checking out comics on comichouse.com.
Yes. Yeah, because they are our sponsor. They are the indie comic marketplace with a difference. They are UK-based, but there's comics from all over the world on there. There's a huge selection of titles on the Comic House website itself. If you self-publish, you can list your book on there for free, start selling straight away. It's like another comic shop front. And what we talk about every week and we love and we check out is the Comic House app. Seriously, folks, and small press creators, digital comics are now more prevalent than ever right now, and Comic House is a great way to get hold of them. It's basically like Netflix for comics. Subscription service, only £3 a month, which is cheap as chips. Absolutely, you know, the amount of comics you get for that is ridiculous.
Fucking loads.
Yeah, there's an enormous library of digital indie comics, and they're adding stuff all the time. What stuff have they got there on the moment, Dan?
We've got Untethered, issue 3, Blender, volume 1, Trujillo, Don't Judge Me by Alan Henderson, the Penguins again. Last Arrival, issue 2, Limo again by Gustavo. There's a ton on it. Also on the Comic House page right now, interview with Daryl Thorpe.
Oh, is it?
So,
I didn't know that. I'll have a look at that. Okay.
Yes.
Does Gary Watson do them? The Gaz Man.
He does indeed.
Yeah.
Gary Watson from Comics Anonymous. Yes, and just to show the power of Comic House, we talked about New York City Gallows on last week's show, and it went to the top of the Comic House top 10.
It did, didn't it? Yeah, and the one that's in the reading group, which is the shark one, I forget the name of it now.
Bruce,
that's it. That's like number 3 or something, isn't it?
Yes.
That reading group certainly has a lot of power to boost stuff up.
Yep.
So
it says Dan Vanguard, number 3.
I mean, seriously, you know, if you're a small press creator, if you maybe you've got like a comic just on your hard drive somewhere, you know, just collecting dust, put it on there because people will be checking it out, and you know, you will get some some coins for your purse.
Yeah. If you want to be a part of the drawing group, the reading group, Ian Loxham organises it once a week. He puts a book up and we all comment on it.
Yeah.
On the Facebook page. It's good to do. Yeah. I did my little reply today.
Yeah.
I've read Bruce again because I think I read when it first put on there, and I've yet to put my thoughts up, but shouldn't take too long.
Yeah. And we will let you know where the group is at the end of the show when we do all of those links and stuff. But you know, in these times, the comics community is really coming together, and Comic House, it's a perfect place for them to go. So go to comichouse.com. There's a 14-day free trial, and no, actually, didn't they have an offer as well?
Yeah, can I go for it? There's another further month free using code STAYSAFE.
Yep,
there you go.
So there you go. Go and read lots of comics. They will, you know, just help you in every way, shape, and form, because comics always do. And also, you know, they support the show.
Yeah.
So
don't go down the park having a fucking barbecue or on the beach.
Yeah.
Comics. Yeah. I mean, we're
like a
CM&T.
People.
Yeah. I mean, well done, Dan.
thank you.
I mean, we're comics people. What on earth are we doing going outside anyway?
You got this. You're losing out. I've read like 20 comics today.
Yeah, and that was just in the past 5 minutes. Tony reads a lot of comics. But speaking of comics, you want to hear some comic talk with fantastic creators. That's what you join us every week for. Occasionally, we have a show with just three of us, and you very kindly listen to that as well.
Through charity of some kind.
Yes. But we got an absolutely fantastic interview from a creator who is thinking on our wavelength. So make of that what you will. So here is our interview with the great Jason McNamara. Enjoy. Right, this week we are very pleased to be joined by a writer who pretty much landed on our radars with a sonic boom recently. His work includes such titles as Ghost Band, Sucker, The Rattler, and one that was recommended, I think just last week, wasn't it, Dan, I believe? Nocturnal Commissions. Those last two titles being collaborations with the masterful Greg Hinkle. It's our pleasure to welcome Jason McNamara to the show. Hello, sir.
Thank you for having me, gentlemen.
Good Vince, stuff, man.
Tony, Dan.
Well done. You've written that down, you bastard.
Yeah. I'm shaking your virtual hands right now, touching my face. Scratching myself.
Yeah. This is the most hygienic comic book podcast available at the moment. So it's completely safe. And yes, thank you for joining us this week, Jason, because literally, as I said in that intro, we've all kind of discovered your work recently, and it just struck a chord with all of this.
Oh, God, yeah.
And
I discovered it last year. I'd like to point that out.
You discover everything before everyone else, Tony. That's kind of what you do, isn't it? What did you read first, then, Tony?
Sucker issue one. Yeah. May last year. Yes.
The Thinking Man's Incest book.
Yes. best cover of the year. Best cover of the year.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
that was my idea.
Oh, was it? The boobs.
Yeah, nice. The boobs. Yeah, I invented boobs.
Boobs and rats. Always a great combination. Yeah.
A lot of our listeners have just gone to the website to pre-order.
Put me on a list.
Yeah. Tell you what, I said it to you before, being in isolation has really put pay to my wanking. I've got to tell you. Yeah.
Oh, dear God. We're only 2 minutes into the full interview. Although
we've read his comics, we know he doesn't mind.
Yes, because they really do come from the dark side, which is why we knew we had to get Jason on the show.
Thank you.
Whether it be sort of with humour or just something that will really fucking creep you out. we just read the books and just thought, I need to talk to this guy. I mean, Tony and Dan had they had preached about Nocturnal Commissions, and certainly I looked at the artwork and I just thought, okay, this looks like something.
If there was ever a book that was up your street, man, that was the one. We said it to you before.
I was like, okay. And then when I got a chance to read it, it was like someone had just dipped into my brain and made a comic for me. Now
I know, because you texted us about noon today saying, fucking hell.
that's the pull quote right there.
Yeah.
I knew you wanted
fucking
more.
Hell. And I'm going to attribute it to either Vince, Tony, or Dan.
Oh, thank you. Cheers.
Just in unison. We're like an a cappella fucking hell. on this show.
A cappella. Oh my god.
No, we're not getting into a cappella, Tony. We're not doing that again.
Barbershop.
I can put the specials back on.
But before we get on to that, the latest book, and there's obviously your collaborations with Greg Hinkle as well, you know, what? How did you get started in comics? What is your origin story, as it were?
My origin story? Man, I grew up, my father taught me how to read with comic books. Nice. So, that fucking prick, if I had a time machine, I'd go back in time and, knock the comic books out of my hand and put a copy of, Moby Dick or something in. So that motherfucker doomed me at a very young age. My father loved Savage Sword of Conan.
With good
those,
man.
Those Frazetta covers, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the boobs, the you know.
Yeah,
they're just gorgeous. So he had to buy something else while he was at the store. So he would buy me comic books and read them to me. So, you know, I knew, Spider-Man's thwip, the sound of his web shooter. Like, that was a word I knew how to say before Spot meets Dog. Like, it's just always been a part my culture. So growing up, that was my thing. You know, I was the kid on the playground who would rather read comic books or books than play with other kids, you know, those fucking shit rats. I got all my morality from comic books, which says a lot.
I mean, but what comic books, though? Because you have to be quite specific. I mean, let's face it, if you're reading Archie, that's a different morality than if you're reading The Punisher.
Oh, right.
Black Kiss. Was it Black Kiss you grew up on? Or
Omaha the Cat Dancer.
I love the bit of furry action in that book. Right.
Yeah, great one.
I don't think have you read that, Vincent, Dan?
No.
We're doing an episode on Omaha the Cat Dancer one day, my friend. Yeah.
It's hot. You too will want to double penetrate a cat.
Oh my god! And that's the title of this week's episode.
You too will see the benefits. Mostly Marvel comic books. Okay. But this was the 80s, so there were a lot of black and white comic books coming to school. Some of my friends would be into Faust. I don't know if you remember Tim Vigil's Faust. Very edgy.
That was a lively first issue. Doesn't someone get crucified with their knob out on the?
So there was always somebody bringing a book like that to school that would show you there was more going on. I got in early on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but it was still a black and white book before the cartoons and everything.
Me too. I loved it back then. Actually, I really liked that sort of rawness to it. It's real sort of undergroundy feel to it back then, wasn't there?
Yeah, it was great. So I sort of always saw storytelling, and I saw the world in that format, you know. So if I had if I had a heartbreak or something, or another heartbreak, or a heartbreak, you would put it in transition it into like comic book panel. Like, how would John Romita Jr. illustrate this? You started seeing the world as a comic book.
Yeah. Completely.
When I graduated high school, I worked at a comic book store called Paper Moon 2 on Larkfield Road on Long Island in New York. It was a dump.
I was about to say, does it still exist? But it doesn't sound
No. They sold it to some guy named Vinny, and he and a partner, another guy named Vinny, and the two Vinnies drove it into the ground. So, if you see two guys named Vinny, run.
Yeah. I'm Vince, for anyone that wonders.
No, it's Italian connection.
But it always stayed in my mind that I loved comic books, and I was always writing, you know, creatively. I always thought I'd be a filmmaker, too. So that sort of, that language of film, the visual language of film, always appealed to me. Mm. And then, I grew up a little bit, and I became a drunk. Fall down drunk, and, I married one lady, and that didn't work out. And then I was a heartbroken drunk. And I moved to San Francisco, and I was living in this big apartment building. It used to be a converted YMCA, and you would walk down the halls, and you would just hear the sounds of lonely, heartbroken men and the sounds they make in their apartments, you know? And it was around this time where I was like, I'll probably just drink myself to death, when I met Tony Talbert, the illustrator from Sucker.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
I was in a – yeah. I knew him. We worked at the same company, but we didn't really interact much. We worked at the same coffee chain, and I went into a bar, and he's in there, and he's just talking about Wally Wood, like screaming about Wally Wood, about Wally Wood's costume design and all this stuff. And you think, like, who does that?
You don't normally walk into a bar and hear some guy scream about how misunderstood Wally Wood is, right? So that warmed him to me. And, you know, so we both had a big affection for Steve Ditko. And we just hit it off. And he went out of town for something. It was around 9/11. He was going out of town. And he's like, hey, will you come over and feed my cats? And I was like, sure, I can do that for you. So I went to his apartment. He was out of town. And his apartment was disgusting. Like, he was a bachelor. He lived alone. And I mean, like, you know, like condoms stuck in the carpet. Disgusting.
Jeez.
Yeah, and I love the guy. He won't mind me telling you and your thousands of listeners this. But so I'm like, fuck it. I'm going to clean this guy's apartment. That's what I can do for him, you know? So I bought him like a shower curtain, which he didn't have, and did some laundry. And I found on top of his refrigerator, beneath a couple of boxes of wine, I found this like 70-page samurai epic that he had penciled, inked, and colored. And I sat there and I read it, and he didn't finish it. Like, he got like seven, you know, it was like a 100-page thing. He got like 70 pages into it and just petered out. And he came back and I was like, hey, dude, I found this thing. You draw comic books? I had no idea. It's gorgeous. He's like, yeah, I got like 70 pages into it. I just got tired. I didn't want to finish it. And that broke my heart, you know, like this guy had all the talent, but he just didn't. He needed like a manager. Do you know what I mean? Like, he needed somebody to be like, make a plan for him. And he was just making it up as he went along. And so I was like, well, what if I drew something for, or wrote something for you? We could do something together. And that sort of like got me out of the bars for at least a couple nights a week. And that got him, you know, a focus and a direction to move in. So we did a book called Less Than Hero about the sort of the gentrification of San Francisco in 2004. There was this hero called the Punk who had a brain injury and he would fight. Oh boy. It was a book we probably could not reprint today in today's climate. But you know, the big gag was a guy's colostomy bag would come loose and spray shit everywhere, and you know, the Punk could only get his brain hemorrhage under control if he smoked a bunch of meth, and you know, he would take a break in the middle of a fight and take a shit on the street.
It's just sort of autobiographical.
Yeah.
It really was. But but he and I, so Tony and I pretty much realized that we could do this, and that we just didn't have any direction. You ever meet creative people that aren't actualizing their talent? They're really frustrated, right? They just don't know what to do. So anytime I meet someone now who's frustrated, it was a creative person, I'm like, they're just not doing something. Mm-hmm. We all need an outlet to stay sane, right? I sort of envy people that are in a union, like a refrigerator repairman or a garbage man or something. Like, you know what you're doing every day, but when you're a creative person, you have to invent the world from scratch every day. Mm-hmm. And it can be mercurial, right? It can make you fucking batshit.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, okay. I don't have a factory to go to. I'm not making like divots. It would be a relief if I could some days. I would know what I'm doing every day.
Yeah.
So my origin story is I was raised on comic books, became a drunk. I met Tony and he and I sort of picked each other up, dusted each other off and started making comic books together. So I've been collaborating with Tony since 2002.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where did Sucker come from with him? Because you've been obviously been working together for a while, and just did a lot of the ideas format themselves into that, or?
Yeah, we you know what happened with Sucker is we did Less Than Hero, and then we did a graphic novel called First Moon, which won a Zurich Award, which helped us out a little bit, and then we did another graphic novel called Continuity. And then we did three books like back to back to back, and then we started Sucker like in 2007, and we just got burned out on each other. We did the classic mistake. We moved in together in the same flat.
Right.
So then we just became like domestic partners. You know, it was we were like arguing over who's peanut butter. And once you're living with somebody, you know what it's like. You stop fucking, right? You move in with someone, and you just don't want to. You want to fuck other people all of a sudden. Yeah. So, Tony and I moved in together.
This is true.
Yeah, and Sucker just went on the wayside, and then we partnered with John Hebink to ink the book, and then he had health issues, and the whole thing just sort of we just got burned out. We needed time apart, and then that time apart just got longer and longer and longer. And then Tony left the country; he was living in Mexico, and he was just off the grid. So
But at a certain point, like a mutual friend of ours was like, you know, you keep talking about how you want to work with Tony. Tony keeps talking about how he wants to work with you. Like we were just both in this space at this point, like, hey, let's pick this book up. How much of it is done? And quite a bit of it was done. So the first every other page was done in 2007, and then every other page was done in 2016. but once we got the engine to go, like we're more mature now, we're settled. I'm married. We're just better collaborators now. We're better to each other. It used to be, you know, in the early days, we would disagree about something, go to the pub, get drunk, and punch each other in the face, and that was like our company meeting,
the board meeting.
He would get a bowl of pretzels or peanuts and spit the shells at me, and then I'd pop him in the face, and then we're on the floor wrestling the floor of a gross, disgusting bar. You know, maybe someone steals my jacket while we're on the floor. It was just a mess. You know what I mean? We were just we were really wild. So we sort of like trained each other how to be good collaborators.
Nice. So for those that haven't read Sucker, shame on them. But did you want to just give a little bit of it's two issues so far, is it? Do you want to give a little overview of it?
Sure. Sucker is about the last vampire and his war against the pharmaceutical industry that wants to capture him and put immortality in a pill. Right.
Okay. So tonally wise, it's a sort of
disgusting.
Yeah, biker gang feel, you know, sort of thing to it, isn't it? What would you call it? An R-rated comic, I suppose.
I would say, maybe I'm not doing a good job of describing it. It is a grindhouse vampire epic.
Yeah.
It takes place in a world after the existence of vampires has been exposed and vampires have been hunted to near extinction, and they thought they got them all, but they missed one. They missed this one perverted guy from the 70s, this one sister fucker. See, he comes out of hibernation. He discovers he now has the power of all the previous vampires. He's not just one vampire now. So I wanted to play with the idea that, you know, when there's like a community – and they get whittled down, and then there's just two people that speak this rare native language. And when they go, that language goes with them, right? Yeah, so I wanted to do that with vampirism, that it is this sort of collective energy, and it has now been distilled to one evil motherfucker. So in trying to wipe out vampires, they've actually made, like, the worst one. They've siphoned all that evil into one vessel. And he's a pervert, and everyone in it is awful. It's an awful, gross, disgusting world. And it's hard to know who to root for, but it is also gleefully fun.
There's some great dialogue. One of my favorites in the second issue was, I need another drink. I haven't had enough to drive yet. That's fairly typical of a lot of the dialogue in it, which I think is really good. Yeah, got to hear.
Life is absurd. And this is a book like the tone. You're either going to go with the tone of this or you're not. But I don't want to do another self-serious vampire book.
Yeah,
like that Anne Rice horse shit. Like,
that's exactly what I was just about to say. We're past that, aren't we? Past the Anne Rice.
If you're going to sell your soul for immortality, there has to be a cost to that. So these dashing, you know, morally conflicted vampires, it's dull. It's dull as shit.
Yeah.
So we don't want to.
Goth is over, my friend.
Yeah. We don't. Yeah.
Jason, humor wise,
Bela Lugosi is still dead.
Where do you kind of like the humor in your books? Like, there's a lot of comics we read, and the humor just falls absolutely flat. But you've got it. Where does that come from?
Well, it falls. Humor is really subjective, right? So that humor that you say is falling flat. There's some boring motherfucker out there who loves it, right?
Yeah,
you guys are dark. You guys are dark. Like, there is a dark sense of humor that's really hard to land. But if you're true to yourself, I'm not trying. This is me all the time. This is my sense of humor. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to cast a wide net, right? They say comics are for everybody, but not every comic is for everybody. You know, this is not a book that I can give to my students. I teach a couple nights a week, and I'm not giving them Sucker because I want to stay employed.
Right.
But it is seedy, and it is sort of, it's a book you don't see anymore. This really has like an 80s sort of flavor to it, where we weren't concerned about how it's going to trend on Twitter. You know, the book doesn't sell well enough for people to be outraged, to even know, to be upset about it.
So with that, does that give you a certain amount of freedom in that sense, though? You know, you can really take the seatbelt off and just think, well, fuck it, we're going to do whatever we want to do. you know.
No one gives a fuck about me, and you're right. That is very freeing.
Yeah, I've got to tell you, Jason, we've all recently done comics that are pretty close to the edge, and the only way we got away with it is because not many people read them. we're still sort of expecting the backlash to come, and it still hasn't come yet. We're a bit disappointed, you know. There's a bit of that going on, I think, with comics these days.
Yeah. No one cares if we're alive or dead. Yay, we're free.
It's quite liberating, though, to tell those stories. You know what I mean? Just kind of like, this is the stories I want to tell, and here it is. If you don't like it,
so. And I'm not trying to be outrageous. I don't think I'm coming from a bad place, right? There's the idea of like, I'm not punching down on any single person. I'm not saying let's make fun of the in horror movies, especially, right? You can tell the author's intent. You can tell if they don't like a certain segment of the community. You can tell if they don't have a high opinion of women. We're sort of taking the piss on everybody and everything.
Yeah.
So there is a theme to the book about the commodification of, you know, pharmaceuticals and human lives and the cost of that. But it's not a preachy book, you know. It's the basis to have a conversation and have a lot of fun.
Mm.
And it's just, you don't see books like this. And it's the type of book, I always do books that I want to pick up off the shelf and discover and go, holy shit, how'd this get made?
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got to write something you find fun, haven't you? There's always a way. Yeah. Yeah.
And I might be the only motherfucker reading it, so I better love it.
Well, there's definitely going to be a few people reading it after this. I mean, there's certain pages, when you say you pick up a book and you look through it, you've always got to have that, there's always that one moment during a flick through, whether it be a book from the shelf or a PDF or something, there's always going to be one moment where you go, hold on, I know exactly what we're getting here. And Sucker definitely has that, especially when it comes to, and this is one of the most important things in horror, the deaths. Now, there's a few deaths that really, I was like, shit, they go here. I'm in. One of them is a beautiful double page splash of someone just getting their face absolutely annihilated, which was gorgeous.
Sucker 2.
Yeah, and another one, which was also from Sucker 2, fairly soon on, was... how do I describe it, gents?
As delicately as possible.
Yeah. It's a death that you... It's not glorified. It's not right in your face like some sort of lesser or cheaper books would do. But the intent is there and it's impactful. You don't... One of the classic things, you don't see anything gruesome, but the impact is felt from that murder.
Oh, you're talking about when we eat the baby?
That's the one.
Yeah.
That's the one. The baby eats
just a baby. It's just a baby.
We've got a political party over here called the Tories, and they do that anyway most weeks. So I think it's quite acceptable here.
Here's the thing. That baby could have grown up to be like the next Hitler. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know.
Okay. Yeah. So basically, as long as you put... baby Hitler's in your books, you can just eat as many as you want.
Listen, I think that's too high a line. I think you need to say something like Adam Sandler, someone like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
Doesn't have to be Hitler.
Could have been the next Ben Affleck.
There you go.
Gotta wipe them out when they're young. Yeah, the baby thing, honestly, I haven't heard a single gripe about us eating a baby. Now, here's the thing about eating babies. They taste like chicken.
Well, there you go. I've got so many titles for this week's episode. It's unbelievable.
Well, he's the bad guy, as it were.
Yeah,
he's supposed to do bad things.
Yeah, exactly. We're not telling him
to eat babies.
I mean, from the synopsis, you got like this vampire fighting against a pharmaceutical company. You know, when you hear that, you think, well, maybe this is the another one of those vampires we root for. But a scene like that, you're like, nah, this guy's a prick.
Yeah.
We have a shenanigans.
That's a step too far for you, huh?
No. Put more in it. And especially that haircut of his. Oh, my life. That haircut of his is marvellous. It's actually the haircut I've currently got at the moment because I can't get to a hairdresser's or a barber's.
Because you're a baby.
Finally, you admit to going to a hairdresser's. I knew you did.
Look, it takes a lot to look this good.
Fucking guy. Just slightly moving on, I noticed in Sucker 1, one of the pinups was done by Greg Hinkle. Was he a mate of yours already, was he, Jason? Or?
Was he mine already?
Was he a mate of yours? Was he a friend of yours
already? Oh, yeah. So we had done the Rattler at that point already. I met Greg probably 2010. We were both living in San Francisco, and we were both working the door for the, I don't know if you know, the Isotope Comic Lounge in San Francisco.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
it's a comic book shop in San Francisco, and they throw big events. But they need, you know, they need a doorman. So Greg and I would take turns working the door. We met, and he was going to the Academy of Art at that point. And we did a we worked on an anthology together, and I wrote a short piece for him about all these baby pieces that come together in the sewer and form a giant fetus aborted baby thing. That
I think we need to get a psychologist on the line. I'm going to tell you, I've got some other thing.
It was called Baby Talk. you know, I can send you a PDF of it, but it's one of those stories that we'll probably let go out of print. But we had a great time working on it. So then we started working on The Rattler. And again, like he graduated school, and I think he just didn't really – he had a professional style, but he didn't have a professional pace yet. And he took on too much work, and it looked like we weren't going to do the book. And then by 2015, he had sort of gotten it together. He had gotten his practice together and was like, you know, is now working at a professional pace. He had gotten out of school and agreed to do too much work.
Yeah.
And this nothing happens, right? You say yes. When you're a freelancer, you always say yes to work because you never know. Yeah. But with an illustrator, you have to be a little bit more tactical in what you take on because there's only so much time. A writer can work on multiple things, but an illustrator can't.
It's easy being a writer, isn't it? It's easy.
Oh my god!
So I mean,
reviews.
To go from a few pages in anthology to what is the Rattler? Is it like 110 pages? I can't remember now. Is it something like that?
It's 96 pages of story content.
That's a big shout. Now I'm guessing that he'd already towards the end of that he'd already started on Airboy because I know that James Robinson appears in the last few pages, isn't he?
He does. Yeah, we knew that he was working with James, so that was just supposed to be like someone at the hospital.
Yeah,
and we changed that scene around a little bit to get some of our friends in there. So we got James in there, and we got Airboy in there.
Yeah,
there's a copy of Airboy on the nightstand. So we were joking that it's all part of the Hinkleverse.
You know, the thing I admire most about Greg is he draws himself with a huge dong, doesn't he?
He is not humble. You know, I think they call that realism. He's into photorealism.
Was that something you worked up together, The Rattler? Because we absolutely loved that book. We both, me and Vince, both read it today, and as a long book, I didn't look up, and it's got a lot of twists and turns in it. It's a hell of a work.
Thank you. It's probably my favorite thing that we've done.
Yeah,
The twists. When you say twists in a book, sometimes you can see them coming a mile off.
No, I didn't have to think about that one. The main
one. And we're going to try and talk about this without spoiling it. Dan hasn't read it yet, even though he's got it lined up to read next. But there are moments in this book that you can't telegraph. It's a wonderful character piece. It's also very, very dark. Still got a sense of humour to it. And the thing that fascinated me about it, because I bought the collection on Comixology and then just rinsed through it in one go.
Yeah,
The text piece at the end, because it says it's sort of based on a true story. And when I read the page of what it's actually sort of based on, that kind of creeped me out more than the book itself. Mm-hmm. Do you want to just... Because it's essentially a scene that you see towards the... You know, inspired one of the early scenes of the book.
Yeah, this is the opening, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, so do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because it fascinated me and also terrified me.
Yeah. It's one of those things... Well, let me back it up for Dan. So probably like... it was years ago. It was probably like around... I think it was after 9/11. So it must have been like around Christmas 2001. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine... Her name's Stephanie. She and I went on a road trip Christmas Eve. Her girlfriend was out of town, and you know, I was just in my heavy drunk phase. I was alone in my sad little building, and we went on a road trip, and we ran out of gas on a little country road. The gas meter didn't work. And it was like uphill, and you know, I'm not great with details. I don't remember where the town was. I just talked to Stephanie the other day. We're still good friends, but so it was nighttime, dark, windy road, you know, sort of more of a rural part of California. So we pushed the car to the side of the road because we didn't want to get hit by another car coming around the corner. And then we thought, well, where do we go? What do we do? Like, there was a restaurant that we had eaten at a couple, you know, not long before, maybe a half hour before. We thought we could walk back to the restaurant,
or do we wait for a car to pass? It's Christmas Eve. I'm not expecting, you know, a lot of traffic out here. And a truck goes by, and it stops. And this guy gets out, and it's a pretty sturdy truck. And he's looking at me in my very skinny jeans, and my nails were painted black. I was going through my own goth phase at the time. You know, I look like a hustler, really. And but I was probably like 130 pounds, you know, really skinny. And he's looking at me in the car and her, and he's like, "Well, you guys have really gotten yourselves into it." And, you know, I never thought to ask his name. We were so grateful that someone had stopped to help us that, in hindsight, we let a lot of red flags pass.
Right.
But anyway, so he was like, "Okay, there's a filling station not far from here that I can tow you to where you can get gas." And we're like, "Oh, thank God, you're our savior." You know, we thought we were going to spend Christmas on the side of the road in a car. He's like, "But you're sort of wedged in the side of the road here. What I'm going to do is I have a rope in the back of my car. I can tie the rope from my truck to your bumper and pull you out of the ditch that you're in, but you'll need to push, right?" Which should have been the first red flag, because at 130 pounds, I couldn't push, you know. I'm not, like, you know, physically intimidating. So I'm behind the car. So he's like, "Okay, you push the car, and Stephanie, you steer the car out of the ditch, and then I'll get you out of the ditch, and then I'll stop. We'll get everybody in the car, and I'll take you to the filling station." Oh, thank God. You know what I mean? Someone's taking control of this. I wasn't going to do it. She wasn't going to do it. So I'm behind the car, and I'm pushing, pushing my whole weight. You know what I mean? Like pushing, really pushing my bony little ass into it. And, he pulls the car out of the ditch, and then he hits the gas and just starts taking off. And then I'm standing there in the road looking at my friend being abducted, and I think, oh, well, I just walked right into that, didn't I? This guy was just going to take off with my friend in the car. So she's honking and, like, you know, steering the wheel to the left and the right, and he's just taking off with her. And I'm, you know, doing my best to run up the hill. But like I said, you know, I was 130-pound drunk. What the fuck am I going to do? So she was actually smarter than all of us. She pulled the emergency brake, and the rope snapped.
Right.
So she then rolls back a little bit, gets out of the car, and runs towards me. And we, like, run to the side of the road, and we're, like, going to just take off. And we're sort of crouching behind, some shrubbery, looking at him. So he stopped the truck up the hill, got out, and stared at us for a while, and then got back in his car and drove away.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Are you and him now a couple, or is this...
him and I? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I paid good money for that. So we were like... So we stayed back there for a bit, and then we're like, fuck it. We're going to go back to the restaurant we were at before. So we run down the hill. We got back to this town. It was like a little pub bar and a hotel that we had dinner at. And we walked in, and... sure enough, there's like two sheriff's deputies having dinner, and we're like, "Oh my God, this guy, and he did this," and blah, blah, blah. And they were like, "Yeah, that's great, kids." They looked at me, and I look like, you know, I look like an ass hooker from the city. So they're like, "Just sit down and relax, and we'll take you to get some gas in a minute," right? So they finished their meal, and then they drove us to, like, their gas station. Like, the cops had their own gas station, so they got, like, a little thing of gas, came back, filled us up, and said, you know, "Don't come back to wherever we are." Pretty much.
God.
They didn't give a shit.
Jesus.
And, so we went back that night, and I had the worst food poisoning of my life from that place that we ate. So I'm on the floor of this bathroom puking and shitting my guts out, and I kept thinking, like, okay, who drives around with all that rope in the back of their car, in the back of their truck?
Yeah.
But what if he had a chain and not a rope? You know, I didn't want to say that to my friend, but, like, if he had a chain... she'd be gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was young at the time, and it was just one of those, you're going through every weekend you do something wild and crazy, and it was like a story we told people, like, "Isn't that crazy that happened?"
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those things you just push out of your brain.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
many years later, she and her wife and her son, who's a redhead, and I'm a redhead, and she's a redhead, and everybody thinks I was a donor. I was not. They didn't. And...
get that on here. Get on record. Yeah.
They didn't want mine. So they came to visit, and I'm playing with her kid, and my wife's meeting her kid, and we're all eating this dinner and laughing. And I'm looking at her. I'm like, "Do you remember that thing that happened? like 10 years ago? And she's like, yeah, I sometimes think about how fucking crazy that was.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I think about it sometimes too. But I realized how I would think about it. And this is really like what made the story. Like at that point, I didn't have the idea for the book. But I kept thinking, like, what would it do to me? Like, who would I have been over those 10 years if I had to watch her? Because I was standing on the road as someone drove away with my friend. And I was like, oh, fuck. And luckily, we got her back and everything was okay.
Yeah.
But what if we didn't? So I kept thinking, like, what would it do to me? What would my career have been like? What would my life have been like? And then I realized, like, how selfish I was about it. I was thinking, me, not, like, what would have happened to her or her family. I was totally like, oh, yeah, that's the story. This guy who's trying to fix this event, but he's made it all about himself.
Mm. Yeah.
Then I thought about, like, you know, the emotional security of young guys and relationships and how...
Because he kind of makes his whole business out of it. He makes a lot of money out of it. Yeah.
He does. So, you know, you always ask your characters... what happens if they get what they actually want? This guy is brokenhearted, and it's his business model to be brokenhearted. What if he could get her back? What would that do to him?
Yeah.
So that was the idea, is like maybe he could actually get what he wants. Maybe he doesn't really want what he thinks he wants.
See, if it was me, if it happened to me, I would definitely, because I'm quite, I don't know if you know this, Jason, but I'm quite annoying. I would definitely be saying to my, I would definitely be saying to my friend, how much did you pay that trucker to get you away from me? Was I that annoying?
So that was the thing, is like, oh, that's my hook into this story, is that the guy is just really taking this tragedy and making it for himself. So here in the States, we have this thing, I grew up with this show called America's Most Wanted.
We've heard of that one.
And it's a bit, and this, the guy who hosts the show, he did have a terrible tragedy in his life. His son was abducted and killed. So you know, he's, law enforcement works with him. He is someone who is, you know, trying to catch criminals and has made his career to better the world.
Yeah.
But at the time, if you went to his website and looked at the America's Most Wanted website, there was a lot of pictures of him like posing on a motorcycle in front of like a brick wall, as if he's actually going out there and throwing a net over people, Batman style. Yeah. And I thought, like, also, like, where does the marketing end and reality begin? You know, like we all tell ourselves a story about who we are and what we do. And I thought, if this guy were to ever break bad, if the guy, Greg Walsh, if he were ever to like start actually becoming a vigilante, I don't know that the cops would give a shit.
Yeah.
You know, like how much rope do we give certain people? So I wanted to play with that too, the sort of celebrityness of being like wounded that way.
Yeah. I think what you're doing as well is what you've described around the abduction of the girl at the start is that's only the first 15-20 pages of that book. It really goes off on a number of sort of story, it launches itself off on a number of stories that are just brilliant, man, because you have two strands. So you have him on a mission and you have his assistant and her pal on a mission as well, don't you? Sort of two stranded, but they interlock so well. I have to say, really nicely, because at one point I remember there's a sort of switch and bait moment where you think he's going to a certain house, there's a knock at the door and it's them at the door and stuff like that. Very clever, man. Really good stuff.
That was very cinematic as well. The whole thing just felt like...
You walk your way through it. You live your way through it, which is always a sign of good fiction, I think, is where you're feeling that walk to the door and you're feeling that knock on the door, but it switch and baits you because it's something else when the door is opened. Very good. Yeah, really like it. Yeah.
Well, you know, I do. I do model all the scripts after like the 3-act screenplay structure.
Right. Okay.
Because I feel like that keeps things moving. There's a pace. There's a pace to it, and with comic books, there's a brevity of storytelling. You only have so many pages, right? You can't figure it out on the page. You need to figure it out on the script first, the pacing.
Yeah.
Every 8 pages, there's a cliffhanger in that book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, we read it as a collection. Was it released as one collection, or was it single issues to begin with?
So, you know, I hedged my bets, and we made... that could break into 4 single issues, but was never released that way.
Right.
Oh, wow.
So, I always sort of like the Walking Dead trades, because they don't break it up with the cover. They just blast right through. Yeah. So, you're never... Yeah. You don't know when to stop, and then you can't stop reading. Yeah. Right? So, when I was in my big... fandom of that, I remember buying a collection and just sitting in my college classroom and just like couldn't put it down. Yeah. It doesn't let go. And that's what I wanted to do. I didn't want to, you know, horror is really horror in comic books and that feeling of dread is really hard to establish. So if you were to break that into four individual experiences, like you might be reading The Rattler issue 3 in between an issue with Superman and Spider-Man. Yeah, yeah. Like if I can hold that, create that tone and hold that tone, then I don't want to let you go. I want to hold you for as long as possible.
And to have, yeah, when you think of that continuous storytelling as well, it changes the way you write or you figure out a page layout and stuff. If you want it to read continuously, because with a lot of comics as well, when you pick up like the first page of like issue 2, in some ways there's a recap of, you know, a very brief recap of where you know if you didn't read issue 1, but you've almost got, dare I say it, the Netflix model when it's a continuous story, because you don't have to give everyone that recap. You can just keep the train rolling, can't you? On you don't have to worry about like, oh, here's what happened in last issue. Here we go. You can just keep rolling. And that's, I think that's why The Rattler, you know, even though it's about 100 pages, we just absolutely breeze through it.
Yeah.
You know.
And do you know what I like? The fact is, it starts as a black and white book and it ends up as a black and white and a red book.
Oh, I'm a sucker for that. I am an absolute sucker for that.
Yeah. That's all Greg. Greg is a master of that. There are scenes where he's also really good. He doesn't get, first of all, that he's even available to work with me tells you something's wrong with the comic book industry.
I agree. not that he's working with you, Matt, but I agree that he's easily top 10 artists for me at the moment. I've got to tell you, since Airboy, we fucking went nuts for Airboy. We loved it, man. So good. Yeah. So, yeah, he's really good. Yeah.
So one of the things he does that I really, really love is his facial grammar. If you look at the physicality of his characters and like the emotional content of their faces, you can take almost all the dialogue out because then it becomes redundant and just let his physical storytelling breathe and move the story forward. He's such a good actor with his characters.
Yeah. Does that free you up with your writing though? Because when you have that sort of talent, you know that he's going to actually smash out on the pages. You have that confidence to not put so many words on the page. Just, you know, you can just describe a couple of things. You know, how much description do you give him of panels and things like that?
Not a lot. I give him like the emotional content of the panel. So it's less camera description, less like, you know, 3/4 over the shoulder. Like, he doesn't need that. He just needs to know the emotional content. Like, this person is hearing the worst thing they've ever heard in their life, or like the last page of The Rattler, he's, you know, screaming out for a hoping to hear a voice that he'll never hear again, and then he takes that emotionality and puts it into the character. So cool. Yeah, nice. not a lot of description. I don't have to. I give him the skeleton of the story, and he fills it in.
For those that haven't seen his work, I'd compare him to Tony Moore. I think it's about the nearest artist I'd give him. He's a little bit different, but especially I noticed that in The Rattler more so than in the recent book. Yeah, there's a line between realism and caricature, and he manages to be full of cartooning and caricature and stuff, but still
a bit strange. Still got... Like when you have that cartooning, and you know, sometimes it seems more cartoony, but it makes it more real. Does that make
sense?
Yeah,
it does. Yeah, yeah, it does. Yeah, because you can stretch the emotions out. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah,
because there's moments in The Rattler where
you've got real weight to it.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and there's moments in The Rattler where it's dark subject matter. You really have to get the sense that someone is on the edge of sanity, and you can see it just by like looking in someone's eyes in that book. Because there's a lot of crazy in that book, people. Trust me.
You know, the other thing that we did was that we tried to put the perspective in places that the human eye is not. Okay. So, extreme low angles looking up. There's one point where he's opening up a wall, and we did it from the inside of the wall looking out, from the back of closets. We tried to put the perspective in places that you wouldn't normally as a human see, right? So there's like every sort of perspective you choose should elicit something in the reader.
You've got a sequence that's basically shot through a camera. It's like them watching a film of it later, which is very clever. Yeah.
We did that because it didn't fit earlier. Like when it happens in this story sequentially,
There was
too much else going on, and we needed something to happen later.
Okay, interesting.
And also, I wanted to be like, how did he get out of the basement? Maybe you don't know, and then we fill that in later.
Yeah, I got that completely. Yeah, no, that was really nicely done. And also, one of my favorite pages is when that sort of redneck, can you say redneck in America? I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, fine. When you when the redneck couple say, "Let's make a snuff video," and I'm like, "They're brilliant. That's like the best scene ever."
That's your favourite scene, Tony.
It is, yeah. And there's a bit of an extra. You added some scenes that you took out at the end where they go looking for what masks they're going to wear. Is that right?
Yeah, we had some. We cut some scenes out for pacing. I really wanted it to move really, really quick. I never wanted it to drag. Because if it drags, you're going to sort of question some of the logistics of it. Like, wait, he's doing what? Why are they here? If you keep things really moving, then you're invested in the story. And you're not asking the mechanics of where they are, how they got there. But yeah, we had some extra scenes. And then Greg, you know, for extra stuff later, he drew them.
Oh, cool. Nice one. Oh,
but wow. I didn't want to insert them because they were not – it's not the experience I wanted you to have.
Hmm. Cool. Is and then correct? What was the book after that? Was it? Did you go straight into commissions, nocturnal commissions, or is it? Did you have books between that?
Greg had books between that. He did The Rattler, and then he did Airboy, and then he did Black Cloud, which is a series not many people, I don't think a lot of people discovered that one, but it's gorgeous.
Yeah, it is great. Yeah, oh, yeah. I read some of it the other day, funny enough. Yeah, it's good stuff.
I couldn't tell you what it's about, but it looks great.
But you did, was it? You've had a raft of books out in the last 2 years. You did Shorthand about an 80-year-old detective, didn't you? Which I have not, I have to admit to not having read, but...
You should have read Shorthand's great. Shorthand was done a long time ago. That was done probably in 2011.
Okay.
But it was one of those books where that was the first time, or maybe the second time I quit comics. I did that book with Rahsaan Ikedale, and I thought, this is the best thing I've ever done. Surely somebody will publish this. And we sent it around, and everyone thought the material was too strange or too dark or too weird. It's about a 12-year-old kid. It's got a big twist to it, but it is about a 12-year-old detective who is prematurely aged. And the idea that I had was that, you know, we all sort of mythologize like our past or our youth, and here is a kid who was born old and he's never going to have like the youth, so he lives and identifies as an old man. He doesn't pretend to be a 12-year-old with progeria. He just walks around and acts like an 80-year-old man and talks about like his great detective career that he had when he was younger, and then he gets out of the house and goes on an adventure and rekindles his detective career that he never actually had. And he goes undercover at an old folks' home. And hilarity ensues. But the notes I kept getting from editors is, you can't do a comedy about a dying child.
I mean, you know, why do people keep drawing these lines?
Gatekeepers.
Yeah,
and here's the thing: if Spider-Man was born in what, 1945? Like, how old is Peter Parker really? You know, he's an I don't have to show the kid dying, but the idea that we all should be seen as how we want to be seen really is the plot of it. If he wants to be an 80-year-old man, former detective, then we should allow him to be that, and people should be seen and met the way they want to be met. And if all the stories take place in the year 2005, then so be it. I don't want to see a kid die on page. That's not something I'm excited about. Yeah. As many babies are eaten in Sucker, it's not like a big. That's not the hill I want to die on. But yeah, people. I felt that it was a feel good story, about owning one's story. But yeah,
I mean, I think it just sounds I mean, I don't understand. Strange when you read that, you know, you told us that synopsis, that just sounds interesting. It sounds like something that a lot of our listeners would want to read, something different. Do you know what I mean?
Are you seeing a kid die on screen? Have you seen the remake of Karate Kid? I'd have gone for it with that.
you know, I missed that cinematic masterpiece. Yeah.
And he's the Kung Fu Kid. They didn't call it the Karate Kid, Tony. Come on.
Oh, did they? Okay,
No, you can't make genius twice. When it comes to that. But you know, we're talking about Shorthand there, and it shows, you know, obviously we've made jokes about like how dark your stories are and like, you know, how you like to step on the dark side, but there is a lightness of touch in there as well, and that will bring us round to Nocturnal Commissions, because even though that is a world that's seemingly, you know, I'm guessing you have a love for the Universal monsters.
Oh yes, yes, yeah. Sir, I do.
Yeah, it is positively dripping off this comic book, and it's a gorgeous looking book. But the thing, normally in our WhatsApp group, the ACP WhatsApp group, we're sharing pages backwards and forwards. Oh, have you seen this? Have you seen this? When it came to this book, a lot of the time we were sharing dialogue. You know, that we were talking.
We're actually.
Yeah, we were, yeah. This is yeah. the one we were talking about. You know, this moment made us laugh. Because this is a book about monsters. Well, actually, take it away. Tell us what Nocturnal Commissions is.
Wow. You know, you guys will probably do a better job than I will, but I will say Nocturnal Commissions is the X-Files meets the Monster Squad when a werewolf, a vampire, and a zombie open a detective agency.
Fucking just sign everyone up.
The crux of that is that they're not very good either. That's the good thing I like about it. Yeah. They're just like making it up as they go along. That's the good thing about it to me. Yeah, they're not. It's not like super action. Words. Yeah, yeah.
But aren't we all making it up as we go along?
Too right, man. Yeah,
true. And much like the rest of the real world, you know, this team, as it were, is an exercise in putting up with the people that I have to work alongside, because it is you don't have to describe, there is the shorthand that, pardon the pun, that everyone has with, you know, vampires, werewolves, you know, even zombies and things like that. And you play off that, but you can already tell that there's a world. You have your own sort of vampire logic, mm-hmm. You have your own werewolf logic. This is a book where one of the main guys is just a cool looking werewolf, even though, like, His sense of smell maybe not as good as he thinks it is.
Yeah, that's my favorite scene is when he tells him what you had for breakfast. Yeah. That scene, I love that scene.
But there's other werewolves in it which look and feel very differently. So, you know, this is a fun just sort of adventure comic, as it were.
Yeah.
With a Universal Monsters vibe. But you must have, you know, do you have like a sort of a world bible, as it were, for, you know, these monsters and creatures going forward?
We do, and then we throw it out. We stay real loose because you don't know when you're doing. I wanted to keep it on an island. Most of this takes place on a single island, so I wanted to bring these characters together and let them play with each other. But they talk about a larger world.
Yeah.
And if there's a theme to this book, it's about fractured communities sort of coming together. And I wanted each of these guys to be an outsider in their own community. So Bradford is an albino vampire. Which probably makes him unique among other vampires. So he can actually go out during the day. And we also wanted to play with the tropes that go with vampires, right? They're all hypersexual and dark and brooding. And he's not interested in any of that.
No.
He's very fussy. He's still in the same rent-controlled apartment for 200 years.
He's very well-dressed, though. An amazing
suit. He's very well-dressed. Yeah.
He's basically English. Is that what you're saying?
The model was Tim Gunn.
Oh, okay. All right.
From
okay.
Project Runway. Yeah, to make him, you know, we're so tired of like the vampires and leering at women and dark, wet neon streets and fangs. Like he, you know, some of the, he doesn't have his fangs bared on the cover. We didn't want to be super obvious with him.
Yeah. There's a visual sort of bit that I love that. He obviously, sometimes you see a slight morphing of him into a more vampiric sort of state, but then he'll go back to being normal again. I know there's a bit of a reveal later in the book, but, you know, it was something that I had to double check some panels. It was like, does he look more monstrous there than he does? You know, just these little flashes of the monster underneath.
Well, he's thirsty. He can be a little thirsty. So, yeah, there is a world beyond here, absolutely. But we wanted to test the waters with this one in a sort of a controlled sort of pilot episode.
Yeah.
But I definitely think there's a vampire community. I definitely think there's a werewolf community. I think there's mermaids. I think there's all any sort of thing that you can think of. They're out there, and they're just as fractious as the real world is in absorbing these cultures. They talk about a Gorgon being stoned because they wouldn't let her play with her hair. So I want to bring these guys together and then move them through a world that has to – you know, we all have to live alongside each other.
Yeah.
Okay. So it has shifted a little bit. I wrote the second issue and I thought maybe it was too self-contained and it wasn't enough of the world. So there's a lot of places we could go from here, but again, like we would need either the Kickstarter and Indiegogo would have to do
a lot better than it has, or a publisher would have to help us out. And with the current state of the world, I don't really, I can't count on a publisher.
And for and I think Kickstarter's in a funny place at the moment as well, dude. I think people don't know whether to spend money, do they? They don't want to spend money with Kickstarter. You obviously pledge to something that the money gets taken out of your account so many days later. I think people are a bit wary of that at the moment.
Yeah. So I'm not really sure what to do with this next. And I'll be honest with you guys, I am networking poison. I feel like I've been producing high quality work that's as high a quality as anything, an Image or Dark Horse or Oni.
Yeah, man.
Definitely,
But connecting it with a larger audience has always been a struggle of mine. And I don't know if it's me, if it's the work, if it's too weird, but I definitely have a voice. I think that's something that I have that unique value in that.
I mean, this is the one book that I think I hate the term mainstream appeal, but this is the one that, you know, could cross. Across
into it. It's got in spades.
Yeah. A wider market.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you're better off going your own way, man. Some publishers, I know, I mean, we get a lot of it through, you know, back lines to us. A lot of publishers don't pay you any money.
Oh,
do you know what I mean?
No, they don't.
There's a lot of people out there who don't see a penny from getting a book published with a publisher, you know. Yeah. And I think.
But the wider world will think that just because you've got a publisher's name on it, then everyone's doing all right, don't they?
We were talking about this, 10 minutes before we started recording, weren't we, Vince? Mm. Literally about one publisher. And I think that's quite common with a lot of them these days. Sure. Sometimes you're better off doing this. We're friends with a couple of creators and they say, no, go your own way. Self-publish, best way to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's the money thing, but it's also like if I want to build an audience, if I want to do this as a series, like I can do a one-off on my own. But it's exhausting. I've been self-publishing my own work for years, but we did the Rattler through Image, and that helped open the door to a wider audience for me. Right. The issue is I didn't really walk through that door. I sort of stumbled and fell down on the other side of it.
Okay. But, I mean, from a Kickstarter, I think you make your own reputation as well, and certainly with your Kickstarter, it was, 3 weeks after the Kickstarter ended that I got a digital copy through? It was very quick.
Yeah. I mean, here's the other thing. I have a philosophy around Kickstarter, which I don't kickstart books until they're done, because as soon as someone says where's the book, you have failed, you have blown it. Where you go if you fuck up on Kickstarter, you have nowhere to go, right? These are the diehard people that will be there for you if you treat them well. So we did the Rattler originally as a Kickstarter in 2015, and I still see those backers coming back for books. They still trust me. They still support me. They still support me on social media. You have an opportunity to create lifetime advocates for your work. I mean, that's the goal. So I may not have a huge audience, but I have a consistent audience that knows that I'm going to show up and I'll move. I'll do whatever it takes. Like, I'm going to deliver a book in a pandemic.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I work for a comic publisher, and we talked about this last week, and we'll talk about it again now. But the way that you build your book's reputation and get the sales out there is by these days, especially, is by building a community and then selling it.
Right.
Yeah, that's the way.
So
that's what Kickstarter allows you to do, I think. Yeah.
It's as much of a marketing platform as it is a sales platform.
Yeah. Pre-order platform. Yeah.
I treat it like a pre-order platform, which is maybe not how Kickstarter wants you to think of it. But imagine if I had the idea for Nocturnal Commissions and we did the Kickstarter, and now Greg and I have to make the book in this current environment.
Yeah.
It would be late. Like, people would be asking where it is. I don't want you to ask that. I take on all of the legwork of doing the book first, because something always goes wrong in a creative endeavor. It always takes longer than you think it will. You know, last spring I broke my hand. I broke my fist in a kickboxing match. So I couldn't do a whole lot of work for 2 months.
Yeah.
So imagine if I did that while I was supposed to be producing a book. So I definitely think there's two different brains to the creative side of this. There is producing the work, writing it, working with the illustrator, lettering it, putting it in the InDesign, getting it ready to go, putting the barcode on it even.
Yeah.
And then you tell people, hey, I have a book. And then you just focus on selling the book and talking about the book.
Yeah, publishing and sales and promotion are the 50% of it easily these days. Mm, yeah, it's got to be.
Yeah, so I parse them into two different actions. I create, then I sell it. Then I create, and then I sell it. Behind me right now, I've got a table with a scale, a printer, hundreds of comic boxes, and every couple of days, I put a couple of boxes out for the postman to take away. You know, Sucker is pretty consistently selling still.
Oh, nice. So good. With when conventions are actually a thing in the world, do you do those as well, or?
I can't get into conventions.
Really?
No. Okay. Yeah, I can't.
That's crazy.
I get put on a wait list and they never call me.
Oh, man. Like
I'm not kidding. If you take a year off, so I would do conventions sporadically when I had something new. And when I had the book through Image, you know, I could get a table. Sometimes I even got a table that was comped. But if you take a year or two off, you're starting from ground zero all over again. And it's exhausting to be that present. You know, a lot of conventions, you just lose money. And I don't mind losing money if it's locally and I don't have to have a hotel and everything. But yeah. Greg and I did the Halloween 40th anniversary convention in Pasadena because I'm a huge John Carpenter fan. Yeah, so I went down there and, you know, I was pleased, quite chuffed to only lose $1,000 doing that convention.
Well, if you ever make it to the UK, we know a few people. We'll put a word in.
Good, yeah.
Yeah, I'll be on your couch. Drinking your bourbon.
Yeah, yeah. There may be more condoms on the carpets.
I hope Tony doesn't listen to this.
I'm going to send it to him.
I have so many disgusting Tony stories, but I love him. He's like a brother to me. And now we just went through it all, came out on the other side. So I'm really glad that he and I get to collaborate again because he sees things in a way that no one else does.
Yeah. He knows where the bodies are buried. That's what he said.
Yeah. I mean,
because he buried them.
yeah, he did. I feel about your work in the same way I feel about Robin Hitchcock is it's great. Just people need to discover it. You know, there's that stuff. Their Light Sucker is that cover. Issue one, I bought it just off the cover. It's brilliant stuff, man. Really good.
Yeah.
It's just sitting there, and there's so much rubbish out there that people just need. Once people find stuff like this, they go, "Oh, I like this. This is good." Yeah.
Well, I need you to tell them because I can't.
Well, our listeners are usually deliver in terms of picking up books once, you know. If someone's done a good job of talking about their work, which I think you have with aplomb, then the listeners go forth and pick up Jason's books because it is great stuff. He's writing stuff that's very close to the Awesome Pod's heart, definitely.
If you've got a Sunday afternoon, read The Rattler, like we did today. Yeah. One of my favourite reading experiences for ages. I roared through it. Yeah. And me and you were just messaging each other about it constantly.
Yeah. I think that was another fucking hell, wasn't it? Message.
Yeah, it was another fucking hell. Yeah. Yeah, it
was. There you go. Yeah. Two fucking hells in one day. But where can people, you know, if people do want to check out the books and stuff, where can people go to find more of your work?
Well, I think nowadays you can go to Comixology. I have a publishing arm on Comixology, Polite Strangers.
Is that the name for? I wanted to ask you about this because that's quite an interesting name for your publisher. And I've noticed it on all of your books. How did you think of that name?
Because I'm like a curmudgeon loner, and I just thought, well, I'm polite, but I'm probably new to you. You know, all these works are probably new to anybody. And that's what Tony and I actually published under that in 2003. So when we went through Diamond and we had Less Than Hero, I had to create a publishing company. So I created Polite Strangers. And then I sort of forgot about it for a while. And then a couple of years ago, I actually made it a proper LLC so we could lose money. and I could lose some of the bank's money instead of my money. So I started the LLC for that. And I don't know. It's just a term. I think it fits. It sounds like a Ramones album from the 80s.
Yeah.
You're clearly a Ramones fan because you're without giving anything away, your username is very Ramones centric, isn't it?
Everything. Yeah. I'm on Instagram as Ramonesome. I saw the Ramones 30 something times.
Wow.
I've got a picture of me and Joey from like 1992, and I'm literally clutching my heart because I am so enraptured by it.
That may be why one of the characters in Nocturnal Commissions is a little bit of a punk, shall we say.
He is based off he's more of a Johnny Thunders than a D.D. Ramone. I gave Greg a lot of reference material, but I always thought the way he dies, actually, his origin story is really similar to Johnny Thunders, who also died in the same place.
Yeah. Is he going to keep the snake? Right. Will the character keep the snake? Because that was fucking awesome when that happened.
And the next one, I think they stop in like the second page. They stop their limo on the highway. He gets out and picks up a skunk that's been recently run over, and drapes that around his neck.
Fucking A! Amazing.
So he
can't wait.
He, he can talk to the recently deceased, and that was also sort of a nod to part of the Rattler as well. I thought that mechanism, we took that mechanism, so part of the Rattler, we sort of repositioned it and made it the zombie's sort of special ability to make him unique. Cool. Werewolf too. The werewolf actually character has a backstory that maybe we'll get into one day that also makes him unique among werewolves. But you know, we wanted to play with these stereotypes, you know, like,
yeah.
You talk about the book being dialogue heavy, like the characters themselves were so much fun to put together and they're so different, right? There's like an odd couple quality to all three of them being together.
Exactly. Yeah. I got that odd couple thing immediately. Yeah. There's one's clearly Walter Matthau and one's clearly Jack Lemmon. There's that.
A rumpy old man. Yeah.
So your stuff is on Comixology. Is it available anywhere else? I mean, I think if you go to the Kickstarter, can you pre-order or Indiegogo?
There's an Indiegogo pre-order page for Nocturnal Commissions and for Sucker. So yeah, you can hit either one of those. I also have a website where I sell the books. But the mail is still working. You can still get physical copies from me that are signed.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, we will put all the links in the show notes. And
And did we cover everything? I have another book. I'll send it to you guys when it's lettered. I've had the art for a while. I've just been too busy to letter it. But it's called Ghost Band.
Okay.
Ah.
Yeah.
And that hasn't been kickstarted, is it, or has it?
No, I might do it as a digital only, given the way things are going right now.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. And then do a print one later. But it's about a global pandemic. And there's like a handful of survivors in San Francisco, and they have like a day before they too will be wiped out. So they decide to start a band. And it's about the creative process of, you know, making art as everyone's dying around you.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be a fun book to market.
But I guess it's comics, so this was created an awful long time before,
years ago.
Because we are seeing some, when we've mentioned it sometimes, you do see some people trying to sell new books based on current climates, which we're not really a fan of.
I know for a fact that a certain comic company has already received two COVID pitches.
Jesus. Yeah. No one wants that.
No. But I do want a book about people that are about to start a band at the end of the world.
Yeah, I don't mind that. Yeah.
What are we leaving behind? You know, what is life but just making things, right? I don't have kids. There's no. When I think about what's going on in the world, right? Like, what can I do? Jack and shit. I can make comic books. That's all I can do.
Yeah.
And this is the course that I'm on.
Yeah.
So we're just going to set the controls for the heart of the sun and just keep going.
Yeah. But there's a lot of people reading comics. Yeah. There's a lot of people reading comics, and certainly we had immense joy reading all your comics recently.
Fantastic.
You are welcome back on the show anytime, sir.
Thank you.
Anytime.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
We love it. I'm gonna miss you guys. No one else says nice things about me.
Well, name one of those babies that gets killed after us.
Baby Vince? Oh, we can't eat Baby Vince.
Oh. And everyone who's listening, do some fan art of Baby Vince.
No.
Up.
No.
You chicken tasting baby. You know, there is a story reason why he's eating babies. It's because people are being vaccinated against vampires. So people now at this age, they think it was all a hoax, so they're no longer vaccinating their babies. So he often has to go young to eat well.
What kind of people don't believe in vaccination, eh?
Yeah.
What's that all about?
Yeah. You know, the world's a crazy fucking place.
You've got those nutters like burning down 5G towers because they think it started coronavirus. Please.
Everywhere's
fucking
info
bonkers.
It's all info.
Fucking hell. But it's a crazy world. Jason's making crazy comics, and we fucking love them. So
brilliant.
Go forth, read them, and thank you again for joining us, Jason. It's been awesome.
Yeah. What am I supposed to do now?
I don't know.
This is the peak of my week.
Yeah, that was the crescendo, wasn't it? Yeah.
You fucking
that
bastard. Was the guitar now solo. I'm going to be depressed, you fucking pricks. Now what do I do?
Trust me, when you hear the episode back, it won't be that special.
You're
going to
edit
me,
out all yeah. the compliments.
Yeah.
You're going to make me an anti-vaxxer? Yeah. Anti-vaxxer, corona denier.
Yeah, InfoWars McNamara, he's on the show this week.
Yeah, yeah. His new book is profiting off.
Yes. You can make $1,000 in the comic book industry. But it doesn't
if
air.
You're lucky. If you're lucky.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
There you go. Another
good stuff, man.
Another creator to follow. Read all their books. I mean, seriously, they're just great. You know, like
yeah.
Say,
we're never fake enthusiastic, and that geezer needs you to buy his comics because they are revelatory. Yeah. They're just good stuff, man. Yeah.
You pointed out something really interesting. When we were talking about this book, we were like, Greg Hingle's art is fucking amazing. Like, it's just fantastic. But like, we were sharing the speech and the writing so much because it is so on point.
Yeah.
I love it.
Things about it, you can tell. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So go follow. Buy his comics and just support some great comics that we want more of. We've had Nocturnal Commissions 1, and now we really hope that there's 2 at some point in the future. So with that in mind, we've got the rest of the show. We've got some shout outs and we've got some comics to recommend you. Who wants to start with the shout outs this week, gents?
Shall I do my 2?
Yeah, go for it.
Sure.
So Mars City Vice Part 1 is currently on Indiegogo. It's described as Total Recall meets Miami Vice. The writer wrote into the podcast and said, could we give it a shout? So that's what I'm doing. And it does look good. Looks interesting. For Atomic Hercules, from a personal point of view, we're looking for some letters for the letters page. So just write your most vilest shite and send it in to us.
Where should they send it to?
There's a hole underneath the tree. No, just send it to
fucking hell.
Fuck, Andy knows. Send it to me on Twitter or something. I don't care. Somewhere. Just do it. I don't know. Yeah.
We could get them to send it to the Awesome Pod.
You can do. Yeah.
We've got tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com.
Yeah, I've got that turned on as well. That one for a change.
You've always got it turned on.
Yeah, baby. Just those there, my 2 easy ones.
My shout is going to be for our Awesome Comic drawing group.
Yes.
We had a great turnout on Wednesday of everyone doing their portraits for each other. We did kind of like you put your name in.
Oh, man, some really good ones.
Really good. Vince is absolutely chuffed, Viz.
Yeah.
Yes, for those who don't know, if this is the first time that you've ever listened to us, welcome. But we've got the Awesome Comics Talk group on Facebook. And there's in this time where creativity is just absolutely just firing off left, right, and center. Dan Butcher, the genius Dan Butcher, who loves doing an art thread, did a portrait art thread, didn't you, Dan?
Yeah. So basically, you put your name in, picked one out at random, and matched everyone up. Yeah. You didn't know who you was drawing or who was drawing you.
Yeah.
And
anyone was welcome. Anyone and everyone was welcome. So if you're part of If you're part of the Facebook group, then you obviously love comics anyway, so welcome. We love you. Just seeing that art thread. I love the art threads on the community group anyway, but that one absolutely smashed it. I mean, I was... When I got mine from Christian Wild Goose...
Yeah, nice.
It is now my avatar on everything. and it absolutely made my day. Absolutely made my day. But just that aside, just seeing all the rest from everyone was just absolutely brilliant.
It was really good. A few people using them as their avatars now. I know Gareth Hopkins did one for Mr. Cumber, didn't he? And he's using that now.
Yeah. Yes, it's just great stuff. And it's just, but it wasn't what I love about it. It was genuine attempts to do people doing them in their own styles, but it wasn't like, you know, taking the piss. They're all genuinely. It was an art thread. It was a proper art thread.
Helena's from Art92 was amazing. Yeah, some really good stuff. Yeah.
So no matter who you are, if you want to take part in things like this, then join the group. And there's lots of stuff going on like this. Have you got another shout out, Dan?
Yes, the second draw off.
Oh,
okay.
We're going to be announcing it now on the show, but I announce it in the group tomorrow, Monday, the 6th. We're going to do an Asterix and Obelix tribute.
Oh, nice. Most votes. Yeah. I drew an object the other day, so I'm going to give this one a go for a change.
Yeah.
Nice one.
And for this sort of thing, is it? It's not so much just trace them. Everyone do them in their own style, that kind of?
Yeah. There's no guidelines. Do whatever you want. Use it as a tribute to the creator and the characters.
Yeah. Yeah.
So however you want to interpret
that. Did you see the Sinkevich one?
Fucking hell, yes.
Yeah.
That's great.
And that was just done in his style, wasn't it? Yeah.
I mean, we do need to put a shout out to the creator in those books because we haven't talked about it too much on the show, in the history of the show, the Asterix legacy, obviously.
Yeah.
But they are far more important to getting people into reading comic books and sequential medium than anyone, I think, truly recognises in the UK, at least in the UK. Put it this way, we wouldn't have the Etheringtons without them.
I read Asterix over Tintin as a kid.
Yeah, in my primary school, I remember they had several books on the shelf in the primary school, and I used to just love. I mean, the whole seeing Asterix just knock a Roman out of his sandals, that classic sort of.
Right.
I remember
when I finally. Sorry, man, go on.
You go for it, Danny.
I was going to say when I finally realised what dogmatics was, you know, because you didn't understand the.
I didn't get any of those pun names. Yeah, they were completely like, oh, fucking hell, get a fix. Went over my head as a kid.
And each sort of area of Europe has got a different, you know, the French are quite snooty with people, aren't they? And it's just playful, yeah, really good. And when we lost, was it last week, Aduzzo? We lost, yeah. That was a real shame. I remember seeing a lot of statues and big models and stuff like that when I was at Angoulême of his stuff.
Yeah.
Because obviously that reigns over everything over there.
Yeah.
Really brought it home. Yeah, it's a real loss. I know he'd stopped doing it and hadn't done it for a while, but still, they're the books.
But still, no matter who you are, no matter what your ability, there's another art thread. You know, just show some love to one of the greatest comic book series of all time. Let's be honest. You can't debate that. Whether you like it or not, you can't debate it. And yet more creativity to shout out this week. That's what I love about this. There's so much going on at the moment.
Loads going on there.
Two sort of little mini movements that I want to shout out to. Sam Williams and Russell Mark Olson started the hashtag Major League Mugs, which has properly taken off.
I wrote the little byline for someone's. They sent it to me and said, "Oh, you're good with writing silly stuff. Write this for me." And I wrote a little byline for one of the characters. Made me chuckle today. Yeah, so I got involved. Yeah.
There's basically one of those sort of name generators. You know, your first initial and then your last initial. You know, you get your words and you get your sort of your fictional old timey baseball character name, and then everyone's just been drawing their own baseball card with these different characters. The art has just been absolutely phenomenal. It's properly taken off. I can't wait to see what Butcher's going to do.
Yes.
I certainly had fun with my one. You know, some people are just sort of like, just out of nowhere, you're just seeing these amazing sort of baseball cards and artwork come up. And this is from, like, a lot of people are from the UK where baseball isn't really our pastime.
Yeah.
Sam's a huge fan of it, isn't he? Sam from Good Comics is a massive.
Oh, he's done a comic about it, hasn't he? They've done a comic over there.
So good on Sam and Russell for starting this. It's been immense fun. And also hashtag Six Fan Arts, which if you've been on social media, then you've been seeing six boxes and a template of give me six characters to make fan art of. This was kicked off by @ MCAPRIG Lion Art. I don't want to murder the name. We'll put a link in the show notes, but you know, fantastic artist that just decided to do this, and it's completely taken off. Because basically, artists are just asking whoever follows them, give me some characters to draw, and we're seeing some wonderful sort of fan art in these little boxes get posted up. I decided to do it. And I'm forgive me, I amended the template to say give me six small press characters to make fan art of, and then
I nicked yours.
Yeah, Butcher nicked them. Gav Mitchell's also done. You know, there's a little. It's a real sort of groundswell of people just loving to draw other people's characters, and it's beautiful. I've done some small press characters. I'm going to do. You know, people very kindly gave me a list of some other characters. It's just nice, you know, to be asked to draw these sort of characters as well. It's just fun. It's just fun. So yeah, definitely you won't have missed it. If you've been online, you've seen some amazing artwork. You know, you're seeing full coloured pieces and stuff go out with some of them. I'm thinking you are taking a piss.
Yeah, I just did black and white with like tones and then slapped a bit of colour on top.
Yeah. And I just did black, white and grey.
Yeah.
Bit of quality. There's probably going to be more of them because there isn't a deadline on this. There's going to be a lot more people doing them. So, yeah, keep it alive. I just wanted to put a shout out to the original template. On the templates, it does have it at the small. You do have the link to the original artist, so give them a shout as well. But, yeah, hashtag six fan arts. Keep an eye out for it. And, yeah, just keep the creativity coming because that's what we love to see. And we also love talking about comic books. And we've gotten to that stage of the show where we're going to recommend a few.
Yeah.
So, Tony, do you want to kick us off?
Well, do you want to lead us off? Because I'm gonna throw my tuppence into yours as well.
Pardon?
Why don't you start with your one? Because it's a funny one. Your one. I like yours.
Yeah. I basically went to Comixology, even though the prices have driven up, and for a lot of the UK people, and I'm still endeavouring to seek out indie books to read, you know, and hopefully, you know, they won't break the bank, which they rarely do with indie books. You get some absolute fucking gems on there cheap. And I found a trade that was it was on offer at the time, and it was called Gangster Ass Barista, Volume 1. Regular is not a size. This is written and created by Pat Shand, illustrated by Renzo Rodriguez, lettered and designed by Jim Campbell.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, friend of the show. Well, Jim letters everything. He letters everything, that boy, doesn't he? Edited by Shannon Lee. And just the setup for this is Trinity used to live a life of crime, but now she makes ends meet by working as a barista in New York City. The thing is, though, while making ends meet isn't easy to do with a minimum wage job, when Trinity's past comes calling, it's like the famous quote, just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in. Yeah, it's black and white. It's I think it's about like 82 pages, issues 1 to 4 in a nice collection. And yeah, I straight up, I just want to say, I took a chance on this because the title made me laugh. And not only that, the preview pages included a panel with the dialogue, "I think your baby just took a shit."
Yeah, that's the one you sent us. That's that sold me on it as well. That one. Yeah.
Yes. But this I had real fun with this book, actually. This is a great book. It's a spin-off book from a series called Destiny New York.
Is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah, okay. I've seen that many times on, like, you know, when I go on the New Comic Book Day browse and stuff. And, it, like, Destiny New York is a series that's still going. It's, like, on issue 20, I think, at the moment.
Okay.
Which is awesome for an indie title, I think, of any kind, to get to that. I mean, yeah. Butcher is just the norm, isn't it? He's absolutely smashing him out.
Butcher.
But Destiny New York, that series seemed to be more fantastical and involves magic and stuff set in New York. This book is more like a straight-up comedy sort of crime caper.
Yeah.
The covers of this book do make it seem like a gun-toting action fest, which it isn't. There is a bit of, you know, that's not to say there isn't a fair bit of action going on. It's just not the John Woo style shootouts that the cover suggests. I do really like the cover, actually, and the artwork, you know, the artwork on the covers and stuff is really good. It is immense fun from cover to cover, I will say. There's a real sharp wit. And the main character, Trinity, I immediately became a huge fan of. Not just because she's got a potty mouth and comes out with some absolute gem lines, so like a likable rogue with a
she's not even an anti-hero, she's just a villain in many bits of it.
She's like a villain that's trying to be a normal. It's, you know, is that but not in the sense of, like, sometimes when they write these sort of stories, you're a villain who's trying to be normal, who's then but still doing villainous stuff. It's someone who is trying to just leave it all behind, and the past is quite a dark one, and you get hints of it. But immediately the story sets her up really nicely, and you're already on her side. I think that's because of the wit, though, isn't it? And, like, you know, the one-liners and stuff. But yeah, she's just trying to make it in the regular world, even though everyone pisses her off, which is hilarious anyway. And her past is
I'm always warming to characters. I always warm to characters who are just pissed off by everyone in real life.
Who just they've got little tolerance for people that are just just complete idiots. And as anyone who's probably worked in, you know, as a barista or anything like that, you probably have to listen to a lot of people. That, I mean, regular is not a size that that comes into all these people asking for regulars when that's not actually a size on the list. There's some brilliant sort of moments of that. People that are like, the customer always thinks they're right, even though they're not. And it does have quite a lot of like slice of life humor like that that really appealed to me. Because it's partly because it is really sharply written, this book, I think. I think the characters are well rounded. It's a small cast, really. I know you get some other players that come into it later on, but you know, there's three sort of main people that work in this coffee shop that are kind of the focus. You know, Trinity's the main
one.
But you know, even the ones that are kind of just supporting players, they're still pretty well rounded. You know, you do get a sense of who they are.
Yeah, you do. I found not to come in with a downer immediately. I found two of the characters in it too much of a copy of famous people. Put me off a tiny bit.
Which ones were they?
So the manager of the store who takes the money across the road, I forget his name, is the bloke who plays Apollo Creed's son in those new movies. He was Johnny Storm in the new Fantastic Four movie.
See, I didn't see that. I didn't see that.
Look at a couple of the first ones. It's him to a T.
But is that? But that's just him. That's just the visuals, then, isn't it? That's not.
Yeah. It's just she's using it, or the artist is using his face. But and the other one is, I found the Tony Soprano.
Oh God! There is a Tony Soprano that's so on the nose. It's Tony Soprano.
And then they call him. They say it's like something out of the Sopranos, and I'm like,
yeah,
all right, everything's whipped around. My head's whipped around there. I don't know what's going on there. But yeah, the art otherwise is impeccable. I actually say, if I ever wrote a review of it, it would be that person can really draw a mean motorcycle. I've got to tell you.
There's a lot of it's a very clean line as well, you know, and there's lots of detail. There's clearly some nice referencing going on, especially like genuine New York sites that some will recognize. Tony pointed one out to me that as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, TikTok Dynaman, where we've both been.
The names have been changed within the book, and there is some really funny sort of like the lettering of like cereal boxes and stuff like that. You know, there's some real, you know, it's an artist that's not afraid to draw backgrounds and people in backgrounds. Like, you know, the main character Trinity, she goes to the store, she comes across this bag of money, spoilers, but she's got no food in the house. She's like, I'll just have a little bit. They won't mind if I just take a little bit of money because I need to eat. And you just see her pushing her trolley through this supermarket, and it's absolutely loaded up with nothing but junk food. Which is a splash page, which is just, it's the right time to use a splash page at moments like that. It just made me laugh.
She gets character spot on. I really like. Sorry, he gets character. Is it a male who wrote it or a female? I can't remember.
I don't want to say. It's Pat Shand, I believe.
Oh, sorry, male. I don't know. But the writer gets it spot on. There's a brilliant piss take on hipsters. Her landlord is just like this spot on.
Yeah.
Like. Oh, it just made me laugh. So even some of his dialogue, you're right. You know, I'm an intersectional. When he's like, I'm actually an intersectional feminist, and then he goes on to say something else, and you're like, they can only be poking fun at him. You know.
And it's the moments like that, like where you see the facial acting in this book is pretty spot on as well.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah,
I think.
Yeah,
you seen me that panel of the bloke running away with his trousers running.
There is one moment I immediately. Sent to the guys on the show, because it was a spit take moment for me when I was reading with my coffee in the morning. I kind of don't want to spoil it, but I kind of have to. I think you'll be prepared for this. She basically gets, the main character gets mugged walking through the park. There's this homeless guy that takes the bag off her, and she gets knocked to the ground. And as he's running away, she's got her phone. She gets her phone out so she can take a picture of him, because his trousers sort of came down around his ankles as he's sort of mugging her. And as he's running away, you can see his ass cheeks, and there's nipples on each of the bum cheeks. And what is the line she says?
I can't remember what it is now. You say it.
No,
it is. Hang on, bear with me while I found it, because it was literally, she's staring at her phone, absolutely stunned. And I'm looking for it now. Oh, yeah. Are those fucking arse nipples. you don't normally see dialogue like that in a comic.
I mean, we've all played bum crack or boobs, haven't we? We've all played that game.
Yeah.
just takes it to a whole other level.
I mean, this was just to clarify, is a homeless guy that had nipples tattooed on his bum cheeks because he thought it was funny. That's one of
it
the
is
most
funny. It is funny.
But that was a laugh out loud moment that you have to see.
I've got a tattoo of a massive penis tattooed on my penis.
Right. How did they manage to draw that so small? it's perspective, baby. Oh, I'm only joking. He's hung like an ox.
Yeah.
But this book is it's just great fun. It was a real good fun to read. It was one of those. I just took a punt on it and I started reading it and I was immediately like, yeah, I'm glad I bought this because it is good fun.
I love the fact we're ruining our bank accounts by just reading constant Comixology comics.
Yeah,
this week.
Yeah.
Mine's a fucking Comixology comic.
Yeah.
And I said I won't get a fucking buy anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do know that you can find it there's probably lots of other places to get it. It's Space Between Entertainment. They've done Destiny New York. They also did a book that I talked about, also written by Pat Shand, called Prison Witch. Do you remember when I talked about that?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
A while ago, but yeah. That was another sort of home run as well. So definitely a creator to watch out for. I might give that Destiny New York a bit of a try because I think the volumes are available on digital for like £3 or something like that. So
I might have a look myself.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a very different kind of book.
Is it not one of these sort of magical bollocks things?
It does have magic in it, I think. Whereas this, why this intrigued me that it was in the same universe because this felt like a, you know, you wouldn't know.
Yeah, this is like a street level crime thriller.
I think it speaks to a lot that a spin-off book can be seen for its own thing. I think there's a lot to be said about that. I think they've nailed this. You know, you don't need to read the other books to get a huge amount of enjoyment out of this book.
It should stand alone.
Yeah, because I think a lot of spin-off books are really catering only to the audience that are reading the main one.
My spin-off book from Marilyn Manson called Marilyn Bungalow is going to cater to the same crowd. Yeah.
it's not Mansion. Never mind.
No, it's the name of a comic, Marilyn Mansion. Don't you read my blog?
Well, these days I'm listening to it.
You didn't give a shout out, Tony, to your Honest Review Month. That's still cracking on.
Yeah, still going. I've got about another 10 days left. Yeah, still getting on with it.
Nice. Yeah. So, and we'll get another review from Tony in a minute. So, yes, Gangster Ass Barista Volume 1, regular is not a size. Highly recommended. It was great fun. So there you go. That is mine. Who wants to go next?
Cool. Shall I go next? Because I've just sent you you guys the cover to this book, which I'm going to ask you about in a minute. So mine is Billionaire Island, Issue 1, came out 2 weeks ago from Ahoy Comics. Do you remember when comics used to come out weekly? Do you remember those days?
Yeah.
It was back then. It's written by Mark Russell, who I'm an admirer of Mark's work. I think the Snagglepuss book he put out about a year and a half ago, I suppose, now that I read it, absolutely loved it. Absolutely brilliant.
Oh, yeah,
brilliant.
Let me really talking about that one,
Outstanding writing, like genuinely well written. Art by Steve Pugh, who's always fairly reliable, isn't he, Steve?
Yeah.
Colours by Chris Chukri, letters by Rob Steen. It was, unfortunately, $3.99 on Comixology, hugely overpriced. Full colour, 32 pages. When I say 32 pages, it's actually 22 pages of the story, and then a text piece, a page of poetry, believe it or not, and then a backup, a preview piece for another comic. So if you're going to go in, it's actually 22 pages, but Comixology describes it as 32 pages of the total package, if that makes sense. The story, Welcome to Billionaire Island, Where Anything Goes. If you can afford it, but the island's ultra-rich inhabitants are going to learn that their ill-gotten gains come at a very high price. I'm going to start with the cover. I think that's important. And I'm going to ask you what you think about it. So I've sent it through to you on WhatsApp. So for those that can't see it, Billionaire Island is written in sort of gold writing along the top with palm trees coming out of the iconic banner title on it. It's I'm going to call it faux Banksy. My description of it.
Yeah.
In fact, I put this into the Yandex reverse image search and it came back with a load of Banksy pictures that are sort of a similar outline, you know, the way Banksy does the
sort of,
it's not an outline, but it's a sort of shadowed figure.
It's like a stencil kind of image.
Yeah. And there's what I look like, dollar notes flying in the air. I'm going to say I don't like it. I don't think it's representative of the inside. It just, what do you think?
The thing I would probably is negative to me is the title Billionaire Island. That looks like a sort of, where do you get the top of a scratch card?
That's very true. Yeah, it really
and
is.
And every letter seems to have the same gradient effect on it, which really throws it off.
Yeah, okay.
Literally every single one. Yeah.
Is the actual story based somewhere in Africa? Because there seems to be where this figure is stepping on the world and it's sort of deflating.
Yeah.
There seems to be sort of like a spray, you know, like.
It's almost like blood coming out of the bottom of Africa, isn't it?
Yeah.
Almost a little bit. Yeah. No,
yeah, I feel like it needs a stronger concept, that cover, I think.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I think you're right, man. It's also got the worst map in the world in it. If you sort of page through the issue, I know you haven't got it, there's a map of the world. I'm just trying to find it now, but it's missing big sections. It actually doesn't make any sense. I'm going to say I don't like the cover. I think it's dull. I don't think it stands out. It's not representative of the sort of humorous insides, actually. If you get into it, it's quite satirical as a comic. So it starts out with a series of almost like we're watching a TV spot, which I kind of like as an effect. It's been used on a lot of things. It was used on Martial Law. It's used in Dark Knight Returns. It's used in The Boys and stuff like that. And I kind of like that sort of cheap. It looks like a cheap advert that you'd see on Fox News or something. You know, one of those sort of things. And it's Florida 2044. You're watching the Caviar Network, a private channel for billionaires by billionaires. Please stand by while we verify your bank account number. So the main villain in it I described him as a kind of a cross between Mark Zuckerberg and Richard Branson. He's got kind of Mark Zuckerberg's hair.
Jesus.
Yeah. He's got kind of Mark Zuckerberg's hair, you know, like a data character. And a sort of fairly young, a little bit like Zuckerberg. And he's wearing the clothes that Branson would wear, you know, like a sort of Hawaiian shirt underneath a rolled up sleeves, expensive suit, like all in beige, you know, as if he lives on an island his whole life. And, you know, he's making sort of that pray to me sort of hand signal thing that he does. Mm. So he owns an island, and he's also a little bit of a cross between like Lex Luthor. There's a Lex Luthor element to him, but also somebody who's just a little bit doesn't give a fuck and will mess with people just for his own amusement. Maybe a bit of a sort of Joker, Loki kind of character. He gets interviewed by a journalist and suckers her into joining him in the island. And then spoilers halfway through, he says, "Oh, can you wait for me in the waiting room?" And she walks into the waiting room, the door closes, and she realizes she's trapped with a load of other employees who have upset him in this caged room where some of the employees have been in there for years. And that's the kind of where it starts. There's a hitman involved who's after someone. Will she get rescued? She's managed to get a message off. So it's got that, a lot like we talked about earlier with Jason, it's got that sort of consumerism element to it. That's satire on the current state of affairs in the world where we worship these rich people. We let them get away with things. We see they're on the E! News channel or something like that. And they're just doing what they like. They get away with what they like. And they are worshipped because they live this sort of glamorous lifestyle on an island, which has got loads of drones around it. And if you go on there, every time you walk through an arch, it registers how much money you've got in your bank account. And if it's under a billion, you get thrown off the island by drones. It's an interesting idea. Pusar is more cartoon, like we talked about earlier, caricature-y, more cartoony than I normally see from him. It's got it's a little bit of the Mad Magazine to it, maybe, at moments.
All right.
He controls it all. The writing is just really spot on. It's a shame it's just 22 pages. If this was a nice big album of some kind with this story from start to finish, it would be much more palatable to me rather than spending £4 on 22 pages. I'm going to see where it goes. I'm hoping that Ahoy Comics, who put out some interesting stuff, they did Second Coming. They did that Dragonfly Man book. They're doing some interesting stuff. I like to keep an eye on them, see what comes out from them. They're an interesting company. Ahoy Comics, you know, we've talked about them a few times, but I know they're still on Comixology, submit on Comixology. They don't have their own sort of full-on page, which is a strange one. I was quite surprised at that. But yeah, it's okay. As an idea, it's interesting. It's well-written and it's well-drawn. I just, I just found the cover very underwhelming. And bear in mind, we go through all the covers every week. And I don't know, did you guys, is this reminiscent of the one you spotted before? Or
I did. I remember. I definitely remember seeing this one.
Yeah.
I didn't pick it. But...
No.
Yeah, that whole Banksy rip, though, is, you know, I've been seeing that on T-shirts in Camden for the last 20 years. We don't really need it.
Yeah.
It's all been
maybe
done.
Maybe in the US, I don't know. It's just kind of Banksy's been a bit done to death.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and it's as it like a comic about consumerism and about greed and about money and about millionaires and billionaires, is it? It's a little bit on the nose for me. Something else could have been done. I'd rather see some Steve Pugh on the cover. I'd rather see some of his art on the cover. And I'm a much bigger fan of the interior artist being on the cover sometimes. I like prefer that because it gives you a taste. It's a whole package. It gives you a taste of what you're going to get inside.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, it's not bad. I liked it for what it was. So Billionaire Island, issue one. Ahoy Comics. There you go.
Nice. Dan nice Butcher. One.
I've gone back to a series we've read. I'm not sure if all of us have read it. Definitely me and Tony. Have you read this, Vince? Orphans? You've been catching up with this?
Yeah. I read the first one because we talked about it on the show, didn't we, the first one?
Yeah.
So
I've bought issue 3 and cracking on with that.
Okay,
this cool. One's kind of gone back to more what I've kind of liked about the series, and that's when it flashes back to the kids going through the training program.
Yeah,
from being like the ordinary kids to like these super soldiers, and it focuses on one of them who's Ringo as the kid, and he grows up to be the soldier gunslinger, and he has a crash on a planet's surface during a dogfight in space, and he has to survive on his own. And it kind of flashes back to the school period where this Ringo kid, he's quite headstrong, a bit of a loner, and he, out of all the kids in the group, he starts to work out that they're a little bit stronger and smarter than the people teaching them.
That was a nice little turnaround for me, that element of it. I like that. Yeah, you suddenly realise that the only reason the teachers are in charge is because of these mind games they're playing with them, don't you?
Yeah, so the kind of general has to enact a mind game to kind of bring this Ringo kid in line, to kind of break him, as it were. And because he's like one of the best ones there, and they don't want to lose him, but if he goes unpunished... it could risk bringing all the other students that the realization that there's very little holding them in check, because you don't know what's happening yet, but like they're being subjugated to some kind of medical treatment or something that's making them more than what they are. So it's interesting as well, because there's in the comic, there's 6, but in the camp, there's the 30, 40, there's a lot of them. So it's interesting to see what's going to happen as it plays out. I don't know about you, Tony. I prefer the training camp stuff as opposed to the...
It's a bit too Starship Troopers on the nose for me occasionally. The battles. The stuff where he's stranded, I didn't mind so much. I thought that was okay. I've read 4. I think 4's out now as well.
Okay.
So I'm sort of one ahead. But yeah, it's got that Stephen King, every kid's got a character. It's interesting, and they're playing with it. I really like the general who's in charge of it. I find him
great.
A really interesting character. Yeah.
Him. There's the nurse. I'm not sure that a doctor, whatever her name is. I really like that character, all the kid character. When it kind of goes into like the modern day, this feels like I've seen all this before. And it's not particularly interesting.
I'm a little bit lost as to who's who occasionally when it goes into the future.
Yeah, it's kind of...
It's not always clear.
No. Yeah. I'm like, which kid was that again? And then like this one, it seems a lot of them, they're focusing on one kid, one or two of them flashing back, and you kind of get to know them a bit more. So this one kind of focuses on the Ringo character and the one of the younger girls in the group.
So I think what they're doing, Magnetic Press are bringing, they've already brought this all out, haven't they? As I understand it, as bigger collections.
Yeah.
I think you can read beyond this if you buy the collections, but because the issues were quite cheap, I think even now they're only $2.99, aren't they, for...
This one jumped up. It's about £3 or £4. Yeah.
Oh, was it? Yeah, okay. So I've been following them in the issues, and I thought, I don't want to double dip, so I'm just following the issues and sort of taking my time with it. But yeah, you can read ahead, I think, if you want to.
I'd rather just buy a trade. I mean, I'm really loath to use Comixology nowadays, unless there's a kind of sale on, but I'm quite happy to buy a title and think, oh, I like the look of this, and get a trade of it.
I think you can get them. I think I was looking at Infinity 8 on the other day, and I think you can buy the trades off.
Okay. I might check that out.
Yeah. Good stuff. Yeah, it's a good series. It is a good series, though. I don't know, not down on it, but yeah.
If that's like the first volume, I don't know where they're going to take this second or third one. I presume away from this war. This war can't go on forever because there's not the legs on it.
Yeah, I've got a feeling that it's either the issue you're talking about there or the following issue. There's an art change.
Oh, okay.
The next one, there might be an art change. Yeah. There's not too much of a shift, but there is a difference in it.
It's Robert Recioni and Emilio Mamakari.
Yeah, I can't remember who the next one is. But yeah, I think there is. Yeah. Okay.
Interesting. Cool.
It's a good series. I will keep with it. I'm enjoying it, you know.
Yeah. I'm not going to knock it. It's a good fun read. Yeah.
Nice. So cool. Lots of fantastic comics for you to go and check out, search, read, just enjoy. The recommendation section is going to be full of the page itself is going to be full of links to check out these amazing creators, as it is every week. And we thank you for listening to us every week, and we hope you enjoyed this week's show. We certainly had a lot of fun. Well, we always do. I think we just like talking to each other. I was about to say looking at each other.
We do,
but I do like looking at them. As well.
We like that. We like that too.
It's lovely. Yeah. I could gaze at them all day. But seriously, we hope you enjoyed this show. If there's anything you want to let us know about, future events, comics you're going to release, you know, perhaps we got a name wrong, or perhaps you just want to,
well, luckily,
yeah, tell us that we did all right, then there's several different ways you can do it. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. likewise, if you have a letter for the Atomics Hercules 2 page, send your letters. These are just fictional letters, aren't they, Tony?
Yeah, so send what you're liking.
Yeah, and send them to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll be retweeting the show, just putting the shout out for all these different things that are going on, and probably retweeting a lot. We're going to post some stuff about the art thread, different art threads and stuff going on.
Oh, can I just mention, I forgot to mention earlier, can I thank Mark Kaprinoff, who sent through some comics, which I'm about to read tomorrow. I looked at one of them, looks excellent. Thank you, dude. Nice. Cheers, very kind of you.
Beautiful.
You should send through our guest, Atomic Hercules 1.
Oh, you should do, shouldn't I? Yeah. Yeah.
And, if you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And as we mentioned it earlier in the show, please, please, please join the group on Facebook, Awesome Comics Talk. It's the only thing on Facebook you really need to do, actually, because there's a fantastic community of people who just want to talk about. There's no hard selling. There's no, like, just links for Kickstarters and absolutely no interaction with people. There's a fantastic community of people there who just talk about comics, comic events, creating and stuff. There's wonderful stuff going on there. Highly recommend it. So just search for Awesome Comics Talk. If you want to apply with the administrators, so say you listen to this show, thumbs up, and what comics you like, and we'll just send you through to have fun. And thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe and leave a review, and it just helps get the word out about more comics. There's loads of networks you can listen to podcasts these days. They're all over the shop, like Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
Pod Niagara Balls.
Sometimes that was quite a good one. We're silent during that bit just to let the joke just fall dead on its ass, but that was quite good. That was quite good.
That was winning. That joke.
Thank you.
Butcher. Anyway,
stick around to the end for a great quote.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, the best quote ever.
There's a little bit coming after the credits, so stay tuned for that. But until then, where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
NeverOnAnything.blogspot.com for Honest Review Month. All the details on there you need to hear or read the reviews.
Okay? Where can people buy your comics?
NeverOnAnything.bigcartel.com.
Where can people hear your Judas? No, I'm only joking. your other fan.
The amount of message I got. And Judas. I'm getting called Judas now on Twitter.
No, in all seriousness, if you want more fantastic comic book talk, then Tony's got a spin-off podcast.
Yeah,
I'm the Sarah Jane Chronicles of this podcast.
Yeah.
Next Generation. Oh, don't say that. I'm Voyager. More Voyager. The neverironanything.podbean.com.
Yes.
I edited something this week. I was quite proud of myself. I was saying to you earlier, wasn't I? Yeah. As you managed to edit something.
Yeah. He never edits himself, though. He's too gangster for
that. That's true.
Where can people find you, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Which you should.
I'll think about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to start up, try and start updating soon, but all this fucking bullshit's been sending me a loop. I'm tanking through old El Marvo 2, the artwork on that.
Oh,
I've got
beautiful. Bellissimo. Yeah. Oh, beautiful stuff.
There's one page, I fucking dialed it right up, and I was like, oh.
Now, listeners, those that have checked out Dan Butcher's artwork, you know he takes it to the extreme. So when he says he's dialed it right up, don't you agree with me?
Yeah.
That's a terrifying and wonderful thought. Looking forward to seeing that. You can find me on the socials like a hipster. No, God no. But you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Jester Diablo, where I'm posting a bit more artwork and pictures of my cats. So there you go. Thank you once again to Jason McNamara for joining us this week. It was immense fun. But all you guys have to do now is go forth, stay healthy, stay safe, read loads of comics, do lots of artwork, whatever you're doing. We hope you have a brilliant time doing it. Thank you very much for listening. And from Dan, Tony and myself, have a brilliant week. And guys, what should they do?
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
Yeah,
that's
what they said.
Fucking good.
Yeah. Bye, folks.
Bye.
Bye.
It's a time for strong words and passionate opinions.
He has that written on his pants.
Yeah. Now, when you see the pants, the time for talking's over.
Just that comment after the credits. Just that comment.